good afternoon, good morning. I don't know. Time is a flat circle. I'll call this meeting to order of the House Finance and Policy Committee and thank all the members for joining us today, even on a little less sleep. So we have two bills on the agenda. First, I will go to Vice Chair Gbadje for approval of the minutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved, and I'll note a quorum is present. Members, we have two bills. I have the first bill up, House Bill 2763, so I'll pass the gavel over to Vice Chair Gbadje. Okay.
Howard, as you're getting settled, would you like to move the bill before the committee?
Chair Gbadje, so moved.
All right, and then I see you also have a DE1 amendment. Would you like to move the DE1 amendment?
I would move the DE1 amendment.
Do you want to explain the DE amendment before we call for the vote, or?
Chair Gbadje, the DE1 amendment is basically the bill before us. It's a delete-all amendment, and probably makes sense just to go ahead and present the bill once we've adopted the DE1.
Okay. So with that, we'll go ahead. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adopt the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The motion carries, and the DE1 is adopted. Okay. Chair Howard, to your bill.
Chair Gbadje, members, this bill represents an opportunity to meet the moment before us, taking significant steps to solve our affordable housing crisis, a crisis that won't be solved today, won't be solved tomorrow, or with one-time resources. We need to take the long view and bring forward long-term solutions. As we've discussed all session long, the affordable housing challenge facing our state is significant, it's varied, and it's worsening. A couple stats to underlie this. In the metro area, the average wage needed to support a median two-bedroom apartment in the metro area is about $21 to $25 an hour. And this wage, this affordability challenge, is most pronounced in the seven-county metro area. And the impacts are serious and growing. As I mentioned before in this committee, last year, Hennepin County saw a 268% increase in family homelessness. We need to start being bigger and bolder in our efforts to address this growing crisis. As the committee is aware, we received a significant one-time funding target, which is great news. We can do a lot of good with those one-time resources to build and create affordable homes across Minnesota. That said, we essentially have no ongoing investments in our budget for housing. Members, I've made this analogy before. If our entire general fund budget was a gallon jug of water, we spend less than a tablespoon on housing. Under our new, if we implement the budget targets that's been announced, that percentage would stay at 0.4%. So in this moment, in this session, we need to think bigger, bolder, think outside the box with a longer view. And that's why we are proposing a quarter-cent metro-wide sales tax that would be dedicated to affordable housing. The majority of the resources raised would go directly to counties and cities to be spent on the unique affordable housing challenges in their community, including both rental housing, creating new units of rental housing, creating new single-family homes to own, and rental assistance. We use a similar allocation model to the local housing aid bill we've discussed this session, a tool that has broad support from our local leaders. We would also direct a portion of these resources for state-based housing vouchers for low-income families, another critical issue that we've discussed in this committee, creating a tool that I believe will do more to reduce homelessness than any other tool before our body this year. there is significant long-term impact of such a proposal. And I'll note in your packet, you can see some of the runs that will talk about the resources generated and what that will mean for various counties, cities. And so let's talk about the impact. The impact of such a bill could create more than 1,000 units of affordable rental per year. In addition, it could create more than 1,000 affordable single-family homes in a year. In addition, we could provide vouchers for up to 3,000 families, a life-changing voucher to create housing stability for some of our low-income families that may be homeless, if not for this kind of investment. And in total, we're talking about a better home for nearly 10,000 Minnesotans in this bill. Before I go to testifiers, I want to take on what I expect we'll hear from some of our friends on the other side of the aisle. You know, you have a $1 billion housing target. Why do you also need to do this metro-wide sales tax? You know, that's bonkers. I'll tell you what's bonkers, leaving this legislative session without making long-term significant investments to address our affordable housing crisis. That has been the focus and charge of this committee, and it's in that spirit that we introduced this bill. If not now, when? And I would submit that the time is now for us to be serious, to be bold, and to put our state on a course to make sure that every single Minnesotan has access to an affordable home. With that, I will turn it to my testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Howard. First testifier on the list is Hennepin County Commissioner Marion Green. Welcome, Commissioner Green. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Howard and members. My name is Marion Green, and I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 3. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 2762. Communities in every corner of Minnesota are struggling as housing costs continue to rise faster than wages. Many of the residents impacted are those who can least afford it, including seniors who are aging in place, young families, and immigrant families in their first home. In Hennepin County, since the end of the statewide emergency rental assistance program, we see the crisis with the number of families entering our shelter system outpacing the number of families exiting shelter at a ratio of 2 to 1. We strongly support efforts to keep people in their homes and to build and preserve housing at all levels of affordability, but especially targeted to those that face the greatest barriers to access. Hennepin has the largest share of cost-burdened households in Minnesota. That is, those who have to pay more than 30% of their family income for housing. And these households are disproportionately Black, Indigenous, and households of color. We simply experience a severe lack of affordable housing options. According to the latest U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, data, 63,000 households in Hennepin County are paying more than 50% of their income towards housing, but there are only 18,000 affordable housing units available. So not only are these families paying more than 50% of their income, but there aren't even units available for them to rent. Hennepin County is dedicated to addressing affordable housing, and we are well positioned to deliver these funds. Our Housing and Redevelopment Authority works across the housing continuum to support our most challenged residents, and we offer several grant opportunities to support housing and development projects throughout our county. During our latest round of funding for affordable multifamily rental projects, county programming was oversubscribed 4 times. That is, we had $33.5 million in requests for $8.1 million available. Also, sustainable rental assistance is really the only way to reduce the number of extremely low and low-income households experiencing housing cost burden who are at the greatest risk of homelessness. We support the Metro sales tax to provide ongoing funding to meet our housing crisis and improve health outcomes, access to education, and employment opportunities for Minnesotans. Madam Chair and members, thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Next on our list is Ben Helvick Anderson from Beacon Interfaith. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ben Helvick Anderson, and I'm the Vice President of Policy and Organizing at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Beacon is a collaborative of 100 congregations that develops deeply affordable homes and advocates so all people can have a home. We are a leader in the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. I thank Chair Howard for bringing forward this proposal and support a dedicated rental assistance revenue stream. The need for more rental vouchers is urgent, and this bill would start to fill the gap. Over 214,000 Minnesota renter households sacrifice necessities like food and health care every day because they cannot afford their rents. I believe you all know this crisis and all of the benefits of rental assistance, and I thank Chair Howard for giving us time in this committee earlier to show it with multiple testifiers. What I would like to spend more time on is the connection between rental assistance and the development of deeply affordable housing. Federal vouchers and vouchers through this new state program from this can be used by a local housing authority in two different ways. The vast majority are tenant vouchers, which given to be used to a tenant with their current landlord or to find a new landlord. This is how we probably most likely think of vouchers, and it is given to the tenant to go find a place to live. The second way, though, housing authorities use vouchers is to project-base them, where a voucher is attached to a unit of housing, and anyone living in that unit gets to utilize the voucher. Housing authorities use project-based vouchers to help spur the development of deeply affordable homes. This is because a voucher covers the difference between what a tenant can afford and the price of the rent. And that rent is what it takes for any landlord to safely operate the building. You cannot get financing to build 30% AMI housing without saying where the rent money comes from, and rental assistance fills that gap. You cannot score competitively on the Minnesota housing application to receive the proceeds of housing infrastructure bonds if you do not have rental assistance secured for the building already. If this committee and the whole legislature passes all of the housing infrastructure bonds I hope you pass this year and do not pass any rental assistance, developers who are trying to produce deeply affordable homes will still struggle to even apply for this resource. Two examples from my organization, Beacon itself. We have been working to build 40 units of deeply affordable homes in Shakopee for the last 4 years. And the primary reason that the building has not broken ground yet is the lack of rental assistance. We are now having to self-finance rental assistance to move this forward, which means that only a small amount of the units can be deeply affordable, as opposed to the whole project, which was our original intent. I was in a meeting this week with our project development staff, and despite our hope that there may be abundant housing infrastructure bond dollars this year, we may not be able to even apply for a development in Richfield that would serve 30 AMI housing for young adults that otherwise would be a very competitive application. The reason we may not be able to apply is we cannot find the rental assistance. Again, the vast majority of vouchers here will be tenant vouchers. But by increasing the total supply of vouchers, you give housing authorities space to project-base them. And these new vouchers can be used to help spur the development of new homes. This bill will start to solve the housing instability crisis hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans face. And paired with the resources to build homes, like capital, will create new homes. We need rental assistance now for all Minnesotans who can afford their homes. This bill is a good step forward because it creates dedicated revenue to make rental assistance possible. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier on the list is Libby Murphy from Minnesota Housing Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Thank you, Chair Bajay and committee members. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. MHP advocates for equitable housing policy. We produce data-informed research to inform solutions, and we deliver community development services across Minnesota and beyond. Our efforts are rooted in the tenet that everyone should have a safe, stable place to call home, and people in their communities thrive when people have a safe, stable home. For our nearly 30-year history, we have advocated that home is the foundation. The shortage of homes and the lack of housing affordability is thwarting Minnesota's effort to be the best state for individuals and families. We've talked to this committee before about the housing crisis. Evictions are higher than ever before because increasingly rent is out of reach. We are not making progress on homelessness because there is a statewide shortage of over 100,000 homes that are available and affordable to our households at the very lowest incomes. And households are barred from accumulating wealth because they cannot afford to buy a home. And BIPOC households are disproportionately impacted due to our embarrassing disparities across the continuum. MHP has also advocated for most of its 30 years for dedicated revenue. As housing is the foundation, yet it is severely underfunded. The state's investments in other areas are not producing the results that they could if every Minnesotan had a safe and stable home. Dedicated revenue provides stability and dependability for rental assistance programs and development. Projects take years to put together, and that is made increasingly difficult by the lack of known funding and the fact that the funding is oversubscribed. We support the proposal before you. This is a start, and the shortage of available and affordable units in the metro is the greatest. We were actually here yesterday with the Our Future Starts at Home Coalition to advocate for a constitutional amendment that would enact statewide sales tax because the housing crisis is statewide. And so we appreciate the chair's efforts, and we look forward to working with the committee to enact dedicated revenue this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Beth Cadoon from Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We are certainly supportive of the worthy goal of increasing investment, enacting the regulatory reforms to support the worthy goal of more affordable housing. Our concern is with the tax increase contained in this bill. We believe this increased investment can be accomplished within current budget resources, considering the state does have a $17.5 billion surplus, as was mentioned by the chair. And I would also note that that surplus is on top of spending growth that's already built in to our budget of 7.4% for the current biennium and a 7% growth for the next biennium. So that surplus is on top of that spending growth. Minnesota is already seen as a high tax state, ranking 45th in the state in the Business Tax Climate Index from the Tax Foundation. In our annual business survey of Minnesota employers, high tax burdens are already cited as one of the top concerns impeding their ability to expand and grow in Minnesota. Minnesota's overall tax burden per capita already ranks fifth highest in the nation, more than 2,000 above the national median. Our total state and local tax burden together ranks ninth highest, 1,400 more than the national burden median. About 49% of the sales tax is paid by businesses, according to the tax incidence study from the Department of Revenue. And as you're putting together your omnibus bill, we would ask you to consider the other tax increases that we see moving in other committees. This includes a 0.7% increase in the sales tax rate that's being discussed in the House Transportation. It includes a new delivery tax fee that's also being discussed. It includes a $1.4 billion annual payroll tax to fund the paid leave program. And we're also looking at motor vehicle tab increases, capital gains tax proposals, and others from the governor as well. As I mentioned, we're certainly supportive of increased resources to provide more affordable housing, but urge you not to add additional burdens on Minnesota employers. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify? All right, seeing none, we will go to member discussion. I have a list already, so Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Howard. Couple questions I have for Chair Howard is, we saw some advocates here today testify. I'm just wondering what other advocates you've spoken to on this bill.
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Myers, it's a long list. Folks that have been working on a range of affordable housing issues, I've had multiple conversations with city and county leaders in the housing space. Basically the folks that would sort of have impact, and also the folks that would be asked to sort of administer and deliver these resources, have all been part of the conversation.
Representative Myers.
Okay, thank you. And do you know what the current budget is for Hennepin County?
Chair Howard.
Vice Chair Igbaje, or Chair Igbaje, Representative Myers, the current budget, could you be more specific?
Just the total budget that Hennepin County currently has right now. This is a, metro, so I'm just interested.
Yeah, Representative Myers, I'm not sure if we have anyone in the audience that might be able to answer that more specifically, but that can be information we can get back to you. But
Chair, right, I could try to get that to you. I don't have it at my fingertips, though.
No. Okay. So it's roughly $2.8 billion. That's a really big budget that we've seen. I've spoken with my county commissioner as well, and, man, I'd sure like to see some more efficiency in the use of those dollars because I think there's a big impact that we can have. I participate in, a local nonprofit, and I know we do a really good job of expanding our dollars as much as we can versus some other people, and I believe we can do that in Hennepin County as well. And I'm speaking just for Hennepin County just because that's where I live in, or my portion of Hennepin County. Another question I have for Chair Howard is, so is this bill going to require voters to approve this like they do for lost bills?
Chair Howard?
Chair Igbaje, Representative Myers, it would not.
Representative Myers?
Okay, so this is going to go without any sort of referendum or approval, from the voters, from the residents. And the reason I bring that up is that, you touched on it. We have a surplus. Other people touched on it. We're raising taxes pretty much wherever we can. Actually, I just dropped a bill to lower car tabs where we're trying to raise them, to 160%. I also get emails every single day about the cost of everyday items going up, the cost of property taxes. You heard it last night. We're losing investors to other states. We're losing our competitiveness. The clients I work with just don't even want to bring, small ideas to the table because, it's just not even worth it for them. And these are ideas that help them make another $25,000. I have a lot of strong feelings about this. I'm, usually very positive and everything in this, but I do have a level of frustration. I'm not going to call this bonkers, but I think this is a little ridiculous, because we need to do a better job of making Minnesota more competitive. I think this has ramifications of actually losing jobs. I think this could help with homelessness because more people may leave, because it's just another example of Minnesota getting more expensive and more expensive. I'd love to see, we've had a lot of other options here, but I guess I was surprised today to see this, and it was brought up too. We got, last night we were all here late, and some of us had some food delivered, and now we're going to be getting increased tax on that type of stuff. I just have a really tough time with this bill, what it's going to do, the impact it's going to have. And I can just tell you right now, that's not something that I can support.
Chair Howard?
Chair Igbaje, Representative Myers, appreciate the comments. I would say I want to just take head on this notion of economic competitiveness, because I just absolutely reject the notion that something like this would be a drag on economic competitiveness for a state. I actually think it would be net benefit. One of Minnesota's economic competitiveness edges over some of our other metro regions across the country is a relative affordable amount of housing. You look at communities like Denver, Seattle, San Francisco that basically lost their battle against the affordable housing crisis. They lost. Those communities do not have affordable housing for their constituents anymore. Minnesota, we have a chance. we have a chance to meet the moment and address our affordable housing crisis. Minnesota, you know, we heard talk about sort of taxes, and I always just think that conversation is a little myopic in terms of what makes Minnesota a strong place to live. We might be a high-tax state. We're a high-value state. People live here because they value living here in the amenities. And what matters most to people? It's their home. Everything starts with home. And I believe that this will make this and a pursuit of addressing our affordable housing crisis will make Minnesota an economic leader.
Thank you. Last comments, and I've got to move on to other members.
Sure. And I appreciate that response. But, you know, being here, whatever, 70, 80 days, it's fine to look at it at this committee. But if you look at the totality of everything that's being passed, I just don't know how you can even get to that. And that's super frustrating. You know, I will tell you, we, you know, taxes are high, and, you know, knock 12,000 doors, talk to a lot of people, and we do get a lot here. But I'll tell you, people were at that cusp of saying, if it goes any more, I'm not getting enough. And I think this session is going to show those people that they're not getting enough. And that's what I'm afraid of.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Representative Baje, Chair Howard. Question I've got is, number one is, I have to kind of repeat what the Meyer had actually discussed. I've actually had a number of calls from constituents right now, but enough's enough. I mean, they literally cannot afford, they're being taxed out of what they currently have. How can we look at imposing another tax upon our good residents across the state? I'm going to ask, but that's not the topic of the question. The question I've got is, what is the average homelessness that we've seen in the last 10 years? Is it up or is it down right now?
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaje, I don't have those statistics right at the top of my hand in terms of the actual percentage, but we had a presentation from the Interagency Council on Homelessness. I know we can get those numbers, but homelessness is up. As I mentioned, Hennepin County, just in Hennepin County alone, a 268% increase in family homelessness just last year. On any given night, more than 20,000, in any given year, 20,000 Minnesotans are experiencing homelessness, including 10,000 children. And so homelessness is a problem that is pronounced, and we are not meeting the moment. And I fear, especially given what we've seen over the last year, it will get significantly worse unless we start getting serious and taking bold action and thinking outside the box.
Sure, Howard. Respectively, it depends on how the data is gathered. I'm looking at a chart right here that says that we're actually down 8.6% since 2010. The concern I've got is, are we actually creating a problem with all these new mandates that we're imposing on our communities? I mean, we're looking at, I'll just say, $1 billion impact. How's that going to impact housing in the future? And what kind of impact is that going to have?
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Donseth, I want to make sure I understand the question. If you're asking what's the impact of the $1 billion in our housing target, we're going to build a heck of a lot more housing. A lot of single family homes to own, a lot of deeply affordable homes. All across the state within that $1 billion target. I really look forward to that discussion next week as we put together our omnibus bill. I think there's going to be investments across the spectrum of issues that you've all talked about as big priorities, including greater Minnesota workforce housing and the need to create more pathways into home ownership. But what I would say is, when you look at the data, when you look at what we're up against, we're not going to solve our affordable housing crisis with one-time resources, even that significant of resources. That's because we are in such a deep hole from decades and decades of underinvestment and not really taking this problem with any sort of seriousness as a state. And so that's what the sort of duality of making significant one-time investments while also taking a look at the long view with growing the pie so that we can take on our statewide challenges.
One final question, Representative Baje. Who do you see managing this program, and what does that look like, and what are the costs going to be to manage this program?
Chair
Igbaje, Representative Dotseth, I really appreciate the question. There's two pieces. 3/4 of this resource would go directly to local counties and cities. And so this is similar to the local housing aid bill we heard. We sort of cut out the middleman, if you will, and give money directly to the leaders in our local communities that understand their local needs with a flexible use. So, you know, for example, you know, perhaps Scott or Washington County would look at building the sort of single family homes, the missing starter home piece that we've talked a lot about, or rental. You know, in Hennepin County, we might see investment in the deeply affordable units that are so hard and where we have the significant gap. And so we see those flexible uses with resources directly to our counties and cities to administer. They already have existing toolboxes and apparatuses. This provides the resource to sort of supercharge what we need to do to build more units and to make housing more affordable for more people.
Thank you. I don't know if I clearly got my answer on that. So who actually is going to manage that and what the cost is going to be? Has there been any numbers ran on that?
Chair Igbaje, Representative Dotseth, I think we'll have a revenue note when we go to taxes, but in our discussions, especially from our local housing aid, you know, because we're not creating a new sort of statewide apparatus to administer this, the administrative costs are pretty low because we're actually just putting resources directly into existing entities like our counties and cities that have ways to deliver these funds. So this is actually a very efficient way to use state dollars to address our housing needs.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Abaji. Just a final comment. That I just hope that we're not creating more problems with some of these solutions that we are trying to present. So thank you. I look forward to working with you.
Next on the list is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. And I agree. I don't think we'll see a revenue note or estimate until it gets to taxes. But I believe you have a kind of a general idea how much this is going to raise. Do you have that approximate figure or that guesstimate?
Chair Howard.
Representative Petersburg, yes. So I've got the county and city distributions. I believe I could go to staff that might have the very specific numbers, but it's in the range of 300 million the first biennium and about 390 million in 26-27. Those were the sort of round ball estimates at a quarter cent sales tax that I have, and we could, I know that I have a specific number somewhere, but that's the ballpark.
Madam Chair, Representative Howard, the projection for fiscal year 24 is $119,894,000. For fiscal year 25, $185,796,000. For fiscal year 26, that's $191,552,000. And finally, for fiscal year 27, $197,110,000.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, this piece that we got from Jared Swanson, our non-fiscal staff here, non-Byerson staff, sorry about that, that says hypothetical distributions. What account? Now, you have the proceeds being distributed into three accounts, 25% for rental assistance, 15% city aid account, and 60% for county aid account. And so this sheet that has $90 million, is that coming out of that 15% of the city? Where is that coming from?
Chair Howard or House
Representative? Chair Igbaje, Representative Petersburg, as I understand, these distributions come from that exact formula you laid out. And so you have the resources going from hypothetical distribution going to county and then hypothetical distribution going to cities.
Representative Petersburg.
Okay. We'll get probably clarification later on that one. I have a final question. I'm going to put it in two different parts. One is sales tax tends to be extremely regressive. So the first part of my question is, do you have concern about that? And the other question is, it sounds like from various testimonies we've had over this last few months, the real issue is less about funding as it is about inventory. Will any of these dollars go to helping increase the inventory for those particular units?
Chair Howard.
Chair Bajaj, Representative Petersburg. To answer your first question about the sales tax, I would say a few things. One, it is a stable, dependable source of revenue. And so that sort of stable, dependable source of revenue for something that's akin to a basic infrastructure like housing provides some greater reliability for funding. And what I would say about it in terms of impact, we are the kind of estimates round ball are over 1,000 new units of rental per year and over 1,000 units of single-family home ownership a year that this sort of resource could create. And if we're growing supply, we're able to help bring down the cost and create lower costs of housing. And so to your point about how do we, should we be concerned about the impact on, you know, especially lower-income Minnesotans? Well, right now, the biggest cost driver for lowest-income Minnesotans is their housing. And in the metro area, hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans are cost-burdened, paying more than 30 or 40, 50% of their income in housing. So this is a tool to help deal with the supply issue. And if we're dealing with the supply issue, we can help bring down the cost of housing.
I will actually go to Representative Nash. If Representative Johnson, you would like to close out? Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The regressivity of this is astronomical, and I want to put it into a framework where you might think about the people who you're intending to help, Mr. Chair. Go to the gas station that you may fill up on the way home, unless you drive an electric car, and I don't remember whether you do or not. Ask them how they feel about a potential imposition of a sales tax of this nature, or wander through the grocery aisle and ask them as they're placing, I don't know, $5-6 eggs into the basket, how they feel about this. And I can keep going with examples, and I won't because we're all tired, but this is a very regressive tax, and Representative Petersburg was spot on that if you're intending to help people, and I think that you said you wanted a stable and dependable tax or a revenue source, your seeking stability of that funding source is creating instability for the people upon which you are going to levy this tax. So they have to buy all the things that go into life, and we all agree that we want to create affordable, stable housing. We all agree on that. That's why we're on this committee. However, the funding mechanism that you're pursuing here is really a destabilizing notion. And I think that if you were to ask the people, and I know the people in my district quite well, I've represented them in one capacity or another for a long time. This never comes up, ever. They never talk to me about this being a great idea. In fact, the folks in my district asked for ways to make our tax system less regressive. And they think that we need to make investments, certainly in housing, but this is not one of them that they've ever brought to my attention. And again, I've known them for a long, long, long time. I find this troubling because in the numbers that we just heard from fiscal staff, and my brain is not processing as quickly, but In the initial years, it sounds like this is roughly 1/10 of your target that you just got published, working to 2/10 of your initial target, somewhere in the $2 million range, $200 million eventually. That is a very big number on the backs of the people who you're trying to help out. So it's very similar to the gas tax, right? You're going to impose it on the people who can afford it the least. That is the very definition of regressivity. So I couldn't oppose this bill more. I think my colleagues have made some excellent points. I am troubled that we've chosen the Met Council to be involved in this funding mechanism because, as we know, I think the Met Council is sort of the new minute of things here at the legislature, that they have they are going through some amazingly difficult times, and I'm not sure that people have any faith that is instilled in them. And I believe that in the letter from Metro Cities, there is also some grave concerns that are being brought forward as well. And I don't see Ms. Nauman here, but that makes four times in 1 week that she and I have agreed in opposing a bill. I think this is an unbelievably regressive effort. It's going to penalize the people who you're trying to help. And I just think that we have to share that story from the mountaintops. Thank you.
Chair Howard, any response?
Sure. I'll just say again, for most Minnesotans, the number one cost expense that they have is their housing. And increasingly so. And so to be able to provide new tools, new ways to help increase supply, bring down the cost of housing, provide stability through housing vouchers to the lowest income Minnesotans, this will help ease budgets for Minnesotans and their biggest item in their budget.
Before I go to Chair Lee Johnson, I will start with Representative Hussein.
Chair Howard, thank you for bringing this forward. We do have a crisis, housing crisis, in the state of Minnesota. And thanks for thinking outside the box and try to create to address the difficulties and challenges that we see in the metro area, especially in my district, in Hennepin County and Ramsey County and many in our cities. I mean, this is, you have been thinking about it, and as you discussed with us in the caucus, there's no other options, but this is the best options that we could come up to address the challenges that we see in the state of Minnesota that we can address. Because housing is an everything. We cannot address education if people do not have a place to stay. We've seen that the crisis of homelessness in the state of Minnesota is rising on the sky. We have to think sometimes outside the box to help and to address the needs for those individuals, place for them to stay. We are seeing many homelessness in my district. A lot of people do not have affordable housing. People do not have a place to stay. And this will address that. This will help the housing that we've been talking about for last few months. We have to sometimes think about it, you know, how we can address. We have to think about alternative. If that $1 billion surplus that we get is not enough, we're going to be back to square one again for housing crisis. And Mr. Chair Howard, we really appreciate it that you are thinking and being creativity and for coming up with this great opportunity to address, because we're not all going to die, I mean, for increasing the dollar or to address the housing that we need for people to stay. I grew up in public housings. Many of my family and friends were homeless. We have a lot of people that very close to me do not have a place to stay. Some people do not have an opportunity to pay the rent. That's why we need to create more housing opportunity and affordable housing so people can start give back to their life and help one another. If we keep denying everything, we're not here as a legislator to address. I thank you all. So let's consider this and address this. We can revisit another 2 years or 3 years to see if this works or not. We can always change. But let's try help those people that need for the help. Thank you.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard. Trying to find those solutions. And in different ways that we haven't done before. I keep hearing throughout this session about sometimes you gotta give a little to get a little. And this is an opportunity for us to try different initiatives, seeing how we can balance out opportunities for the most vulnerable. My district's hurting right now.
there can be some folks that we can agree to disagree on whether this is the solution, but there's opportunity in new endeavors. And I believe that we got to look at what the best outcome is. And if we don't try different outcomes, we don't know that. Let's try this outcome, and let's look at what the statistics are showing from the evaluation, from those partnerships with the Met, from the folks that know the data, and also continue to build on having other avenues in the future to come about this, because we know that $1 billion isn't going to fill the gap. It's not gonna heal everything from the trauma of what homelessness looks like. But it's an opportunity with this bill to be able to create a certain infrastructure and housing that this state has never seen before. And that's the goal here. We want to go moving forward and not backwards. I'd like to echo a little bit of what my colleague, Representative Hussein, stated, you know, giving a little extra sometimes to make sure that it's secured, that you have secured housing. I'm for that. I'm for that if it's not going to have my students or folks in my district or in your district or in your district without a roof over their heads. I don't look at this as a gamble. I look at this as strategy. And we've taken a long time in our committee. You've taken a long time dedicated to this work to say, let's try it. So let's do this. Let's give it a try. Let's give it a push. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Vice Chair Badgey, Representative Howard. I understand what you want to do here. I believe it's the wrong approach. We've heard speeches in here tonight with lots of virtue signaling, just like last night. Or early this morning, whichever you want to call it, as most of us were here till around 5 o'clock this morning. Now, in your bill, just the first biennium, it raises almost, where is that number? Almost $300 million. We started with, before we spent a couple billion dollars already off the House floor, almost $20 billion surplus. $20 billion, with a B, of overtaxed citizens of the state of Minnesota. You have a target of $1 billion in the housing, which is almost nine times what a normal housing budget is. It's interesting that when we have a surplus that size, the largest surplus in the history of the state, that we want to raise tax. And granted, the tax you're looking at is only 0.25%. But in transportation, Representative Hortstein wants to do another 0.75% tax increase, sales tax increase. So that's 1% sales tax increase on our state, or on our in the metro area. I was at Patrick McGovern's last night, and I paid almost 9% with all the city taxes on sales tax going to having dinner last night during our break. So if both these go on, we're pushing 10% sales tax in the metro area, depending where you go. If you have liquor, it's even higher, because it's a higher sales tax on liquor as well, if you had a restaurant. Overtaxation can be a problem. That was part of the issue with the Boston Tea Party. Overtaxation, and I believe at the time that was roughly 2-3% tax, and we're pushing 10%. tough part about tax increases, it affects those who can afford it the least. Now, we've been talking a lot of this committee, a lot of money going to nonprofits, because the goal is 30% of income shouldn't go to towards their housing. But what we haven't talked about is what's causing the high cost of housing and homes. We don't know if it's the regulation, the supply chain issue. We don't know if it's all the red tape that you have to go through to build a home, zoning issues. We haven't even dug into it. All we talked about is giving money to nonprofits. Billions of dollars. We've talked about the starting a new program, although we already have three for rental assistance in the Section 8 housing program. We're going to, looks like we might start a fourth one, or maybe a fifth. I can't remember how many we talked about anymore. But all that does is shift the costs, and all shifting costs does is increase costs. I've looked at some of the programs doing the Section 8 housing vouchers. They'll get $20, $25, $30 million for the program. You know, it was interesting seeing 30% or 50% of their revenue go towards staff, not to the program. We need to look at how we're doing it. Do we need to and nonprofits doing it, and actually the state do it at a lower cost so we can get more money to the people who actually need it? Maybe we need to start looking at that. Raising taxes is not the way to do it. I'm trying to figure out where the $30 million disappeared to out of your formula. You have estimated the revenue the first year of just shy of $120 million, but you only have $90 million going out. Where'd the other $30 million go? Disappear. Overtaxation and overregulation drives out business. In Minnesota right now, the population is actually, we have more people leaving than coming to the state. A very good businessman, investor, and journalist, and actually television personality from 2004 to 2014 recently made a $45 million investment in North Dakota. And the best part, he called Minnesota uninvestable. An uninvestable state due to our policy. Overtaxation is a bad policy, and we're stuck in this quagmire. So we really need to look at what the causes is. Do we need low-income housing? Absolutely. Do we need deep affordable housing? Absolutely. But we need housing on all scales, workforce, regular family home. We need it at the high end for the simple reason in my area, and I think Representative Dossett can back it up, as he is in real estate. A house for a while, not that long ago, wouldn't last 20 minutes on the market, and it was sold at $60,000 or more above asking price. And most of them were not from our area. They were coming from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the suburbs. they're walking away from down here because of the craziness and moving to an area that they thought was safe, not just for them, but their kids and their families. It's still right now, I don't think a house is on the market more than 5 days before it's sold. And that's even with these high interest rates. And this affordable housing is getting worse right now. If you had a mortgage of $1,100 was your mortgage payment 6 months ago, or six, 8 months ago before they started raising interest rates. If you want to buy a house for that same value, it is now up to $1,800 a month because of interest rates. More and more housing is becoming unaffordable because of the condition of our banks. Interest rates have been the highest they've been for many years, although I can still remember 14% interest rates. I grew up in that right out of high school, and sometimes even higher. Representative Howard, I know you, you're looking at trying to do what you think is right. Overtaxing is a bigger problem. We need to prioritize where we put our funds. That's going to do the most good. And keeping it all at the lower end isn't going to help. Because I talk to people that are living in the Section 8 housing. They want to get out. They're not on the vouchers. But they have no place to move or buy. So just adding to the low end is not going to help the problem. We need housing. We need a way to figure out how to drive down the cost of all housing. And if that's dealing with regulations or zoning, we have to look at that. We can't do much with the supply chain issue, getting the material, although it's getting a lot better in my community. I'm seeing a lot more lumber going down the rail track. But it's something we need to look at. I don't know what the number is. I don't know. Representative Howard, do you actually know what the how many dollars we need to get out of this mess?
Senator Johnson, is that a rhetorical question or an actual question?
No, that was an actual question.
Chair Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Johnson, I know there has been, I don't have an exact statistic. I think there's been some analysis to sort of come up with different ways to look at it. What I can say is, you know, when we put together a 10-year package, we looked at finding ways to sort of cut that supply-demand piece in half. And you can do that with repeated ongoing investment. And so I could follow up and get those specific numbers. The number is huge. I mean, it really is, to truly meet the need. And I guess that's what I was going to say this in my closing, but I think it's relevant now. You know, we talk about the high cost of housing, and truly the biggest driver of the high cost of housing is supply-demand 101. There aren't enough affordable homes. We need to build more affordable homes. And the market is not building those homes that are affordable. We need a massive public investment to meet this need. There's no magic free market solution that will meet the scope of the challenge we're up against. And so that's what a solution like this brings to the table.
Representative Chair Howard, right now our housing stock, housing and rental units, is right around 40,000 units short. And that's a mix of everything. Most of the, just about all the bills we've been hearing this year is dealing just with one end of it. We need to deal with all of it. But we also need to look at what's been driving the costs up. Just shifting the money doesn't solve the problem. So we need to find a way to look at the market, how to bring the market down, not dramatically, but slowly bring it down. And if we bring that market down and allow private investors to invest in apartment complex, get it to the point where it's cost effective, they will do that. because a lot of those companies that get their funding, they get it through our pension program, pension investment, which is what our state employees receive. So it's a lot complicated. We need to work at not just one area in Target. We need to look at the whole thing, because if we just go to one end, we're going to lose. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I'll just add before I go to you for final comments, Chair Howard, you know, this is an opportunity to have a dedicated revenue source for housing, which I think is something that has been missing in Minnesota's budget as it relates to housing. And so I appreciate you for bringing this forward and ensuring that we can really have that deep conversation about what it looks like to have a sustained revenue source to ensure that we're keeping up with our housing needs in the state. So Chair Howard, final comment.
Thank you, Chair Bajaj. Thank you, members, for the discussion. You know, clearly, you know, there are some ideological, philosophical kind of divides about how we go about investing and creating the public good here, and we discuss some of those things. And I guess what I want to close with is that whether we're talking about improving health, improving economics, economic security for families, addressing our deep racial disparities in wealth, in housing, in health, all roads lead back to a stable home. And it's time for solutions as big as the problem we're facing, and that's why we have the solution before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I will renew my motion that House File 2763, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and this bill is laid over. The next bill on our list is House File. Oh wait. Well. Okay. Well, we will. Hold on. Just going to make sure that we. All right. He's back. House File 3107, Representative Hussein. You're needed at the table for your bill.
Almost. I'm here.
Representative Hussein, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Yes, please.
Thank you. House File 3107 is before the committee for possible inclusion. Representative Hussein, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and member of communities, for having me here again. And I'm pretty excited to show up and bring another great affordable housing in the Rando Land Trust. In 1993, Rando Community Land Trust became the first community land trust in the Minnesota. For the first 10 years, this organization serves historic Rando neighborhoods, African-American neighborhood that was a social and economic center for the city, black community. This community in Rando has been affected 1970s, early when the 94 came, this community had everything. They had their own theaters, they had their business, housing, everything was thriving. But the 1990, Highway 94 has caused a lot of problem in my district. And now my district is the poorest district in the state of Minnesota. The lowest incomes, housing are what we're trying to address and trying to close that gap and equity. I do have a testifier, if you would allow me to yell for April Locus, who is a community member of Rando and longtime residents, who will explain to us the story and what the community has went through in the past and why it's so important, this bill that we're asking for housing.
First on the testifier list is April Lucas. Welcome to the committee. Please come down to the table. Welcome. State your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is April Duchess Lucas. I am a member of the Rondo community, but it didn't start with me. My grandfather Alfonso Alonzo Lee Lucas, purchased his first home in Rondo in the mid-30s. He worked on the railroad during that time. That was also during segregation. And so when those men who he worked with worked on a week, off a week, that was where they were able to call home, was my grandfather's duplex with a finished basement with 11 bedrooms to house people so that they could bring economic stability to the Rondo community. My father, Alonzo Lee Lucas, also kept that home after my grandfather's passing in 1972. My father, during that time, came to things like this and helped his friends who were dealing with the drug crisis in our communities, where we were dealing with people becoming prostitutes in order to feed their families, dealing with drugs and having drug habits and not having homes. And my father opened my grandfather's home once again to house those who were in need. And that was the house that I grew up in. And I got an opportunity to learn and meet a lot of people in a lot of different areas, from Mr. Walter Mondale to Mr. Charlie McCarthy to lots of people that a lot of people wouldn't know their names, but my dad did. And so I am very blessed to be able to sit in front of you today to have this conversation on behalf of my paternal lineage. And I'm here to say that we do still own the home. My brothers live in the home now, and the home is in great despair. My brothers are they're in their 60s. They're challenged with keeping jobs that will give them a opportunity to maintain a home of such stature, a historical landmark in our Rondo community, historical to our nation, because these were men who worked on the railroad, who helped to build a community. And so I am here today to talk to you about the necessity of creating a funding stream that will assist elders in our communities who have maintained through these weathered times the ability to keep the homes and help them continue to keep their homes. A lot of the things that we see with what we call gentrification are also a direct correlation to the inability of people who are low income to have access to funding to be able to maintain and keep their homes, and thus they are then left to make other choices, and those choices are to find homes that are financially within their reach and outside of their communities. And sometimes outside of their communities are vouchers that are given to them so that they can have affordable housing, which says that they have to leave their community for X amount of time in order to qualify for that affordable housing. So I'm hoping that today, in the information that you'll hear from Mr. Hussein and from others who are here to testify, that you'll hear stories about the community of Rondo and its vibrant strength and resilience to stay. Wonderful, loving, cherishing moments to come back. And my call to action to help those in our community who are aging but want to stay in their community and continue to be a part of its history. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier on the list is Micaiah Griffin, Executive Director of Rondo Community Land Trust. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Micaiah Griffin. I am the Executive Director of Rondo Community Land Trust. I also consider myself a daughter of Rondo. My family moved to the community in the 40s before 94 came through. My great aunt and uncle had their first child in a rooming house right on Rondo Avenue, and subsequently were able to move and own in the community. And I have so many cherished and wonderful memories of growing up in a community that everybody raised me, so it was great. And couldn't get away with anything. But the Rondo Community Land Trust is a is really about sharing in equity, sharing in wealth, and community coming together in order to ensure that community has what it needs to move forward. Tell you a little bit about our mission. So Rondo Community Land Trust, again, was the first community land trust in the state of Minnesota. We were formed in 1993. We started in the historic Rondo community, and we've grown to encompass all of Ramsey County. So while I'm, I have the great, wonderful privilege of serving affordable housing and commercial development opportunities in all of Ramsey County, I'm honored to also be able to serve and bolster the work that we do in the Rondo community. Rondo community mission is to continue again to preserve by affording and advocating for permanently affordable, sustainable housing for families and individuals with low to moderate income, to promote the utilization of the community land trust model as a method to preserve affordable housing, have economic growth, and stabilize community neighborhoods, to also support and celebrate cultural diversity by providing affordable business opportunities, to also increase community wealth, property values, and jobs. As you well know, the rising cost paired with stagnating wages, underemployment, are deepening our homeownership disparities. Today, the average home price across the Twin Cities is $341,000 to purchase a home, meaning too many individuals who are mortgage approved are priced out of the opportunity to actually experience the homeownership, the ability to have homeownership. We also have heard a lot today, and that homeownership is also the cornerstone of financial and social well-being. Rondo Community Land Trust is called to move forward strategies that can remove barriers, and the Land Trust strategy has proven to be one of those strategies that actually help remove barriers. Not only do we increase the seekers, home buyers' ability to have more buying power, but our investment also ensures that affordability for all future home buyers by tying that investment to the land. The request that is under consideration today will help bolster our ability to develop 10 new properties in the Rondo community. It would also help bolster our home buyer initiated program, which places choice and agency with home buyers, low to moderate income home buyers, that actually can take affordability investment paired with their mortgage and have more buying power to purchase anywhere in Ramsey County, but also help bolster our reparative framework that we have with our Return to Rondo program, where we want to really have those residents that were displaced by 94 have an opportunity to come back to the community. And it also helps preserve affordable housing in the community, again, by having home buyers that are able to purchase a home on the market, and those homes stay permanently affordable for generations. We also are asking for financial support, as you heard the other testifier, that supports our neighborhood legacy, which allows those most fragilely and financially at risk to be displaced from their homes to have, most times it's repair that's needed, or if there's issues with the ability to continue to pay taxes or things like that. We help bring those home, bring those properties into the community land trust model. We not only help homeowners seek and have home ownership, but we also provide long-standing support through our post-purchase stewardship programs as well. We don't just drop people in a vacuum and kind of sink or swim. You got a home, you know, here you go. But we want to make sure that we're coming beside them with other programming that helps folks get along their own economic continuum. The other wonderful thing about the community land trust model is that it takes one time investment, and we make that permanently affordable for generations. Thank you to Representative Hussein for carrying this bill and for the opportunity to testify for you before you today. I think we should get to questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Griffin. I'll just check if there's any members of the public wishing to testify on this bill. Not seeing any, we'll move to member discussion. I have Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, appreciate that. So over the years, I've been on transportation for quite a while, and so we've heard about the Reconnect Rondo project, and I think the bonding bill a few years ago actually gave some substantial dollars to that. My question is, the land trust that you're involved with, are you connected with that, with the development and analysis and planning in the Reconnect Rondo program?
Ms. Griffin.
Thank you. Thank you. Rondo Community Land Trust was formed in 1993, and while we support any effort, whether it's Reconnect Rondo, Model Cities, Aurora St. Anthony, Hallie Q. Brown, and other NeighborWorks Habitat, others that also support affordable housing and economic opportunities in the community, we do support and work with Reconnect Rondo. But Rondo Community Land Trust is an organization providing in-time need for the Rondo community today.
Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, because I think there was, I think it was like $6 million or so, I think, put into the Reconnect Rondo, and I think part of that included some additional housing and other infrastructure on top of it. So I just wasn't sure how you were tied in with that planning with that. So
understood. They're still doing all the research of that today. But we have in-time need today where our community members are currently being displaced from homes or being barred from the ability to come in and purchase homes.
Representative Hussein, do you have any other?
Yes, I was just following up. The question is, Reconnect Rondo is still learning and doing a research within the community, and we host every month twice. We would love to invite you and learn a little bit more about Rondo community. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to involve the community. We don't want to decide for the community the decision. We want the community to decide what they wanted for their infrastructure in the city and the Rondo community.
Thank you. Representative Peter, final comments?
Yeah, thank you. I just was hoping that your group would be somewhat involved in those discussions and so forth, because everybody that's come in front of our committees have been very passionate about the program, and so we appreciate it. I just think all of the expertise around the table is good.
I would like to, I'm sorry, if I thank you, my apologies. Don't, I am excited about that, and we do work closely with the Reconnect Rondo. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hussein. Let me first say I thought both your testifiers did a great job. Was looking at the website here and just had some, it's an operational question. To be honest, I kind of like the model that you have when you look at, how does it work. I'm just interested to know from the families or the people that participate in this, it seems like there's probably quite a bit of education mm-hmm. that you've got to give to them on the front end and as well as the back end so that they understand, the process. So if they're going to be moving out and they're going to get that appreciated value, do you ever run into issues with people saying, oh, I didn't understand that part on the back end when they're, looking to move out and realize that gain?
Ms. Griffin.
Thank you. We have post-purchase and pre-purchase education. When we have orientation is a deep dive into what a community land trust is, and so that everybody understands how it works. Before someone even closes with a community land trust model, we do require that they meet with an attorney so that the attorney can help them understand what our ground lease means. So yes, they are educated. We also communicate with our homeowners every step of the way, frequently, just to continue to let them know what they're doing and what they're really a part of.
Representative Myers.
Yeah, and thank you for that. It sounds, I'd like to hear some of that thoroughness as, was brought up before in these committees. We maybe don't hear as much of that, so I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Chott. And members, we are coming close to our time, so just remind members.
Thank you. I'll try to be as brief as possible. The Rondo neighborhood, the most iconic figure of the Rondo neighborhood. It's by a name, by a fellow with a name called Jack Rosenblum, right? I grew up on 495 and a half Dell Street North. Mr. Tiger Jack, who is Jack Rosenblum, grew up on 369 North Dell Street. In the 80s, when I grew up and I went to Webster Magnolia Elementary School, we used to go by his candy shack, daily, and we would miss the bus just so that we can walk by his candy shack and buy, back then, the newest flavor of Now and Later, which was called the Green Machine.
Yes.
Which was one layer green, one layer purple.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And so the significance of Mr. Tiger Jack is that that 8x10 shack was one of the last and only remaining business that stood after the 1960 development of I-94, you know? And so I just want to bring that to our attention because, you know, when we talk about the Rondo neighborhood, we can't forget to talk about Mr. Tiger Jack. Thank you.
Very briefly, Ms. Griffin.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I would like to let you know that my great uncle owns the house right next door to Tiger Jack's. So I spent a lot of time, my school bus picked me up from there, and Tiger Jack would make breakfast for us in the morning before we got on the bus. So thank you so much. And we do understand that Rondo Community Land Trust itself today helps support business owners in the community as well as homeowners in the community. It's one of the favorite stories that I want to talk about, the power of owning a home and combining that with economic opportunities. As a young woman, single mother from the Rondo community, purchased a Rondo Community Land Trust in 2004. She was a single mother struggling. She went back to school, got stability for herself, went back to school, got her PhD, and now she runs a black-owned therapy practice out of our commercial development. She subsequently sold her home to another low-income homeowner, and her equity allowed her to move into the open real estate market. That's powerful. And if we can continue to do that, not only in the Rondo community, but all over Ramsey County, I think we have something there. And it's an opportunity to get at a lot of things that I heard today from the committee members here. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think last on the list will be Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hussein. It's a great honor to serve as co-author on this piece of legislation because I come from the West Side, and it is home of generations of the many Latinos who migrated in the flats and were displaced after the flooding, and also bridged so much cultural relevance of inspiration to continue to fight for your communities and what generational wealth looks like when you have the foundation of those communities continue. And Rondo has been that staple for not just the Rondo area of St. Paul, but for the city of St. Paul when we talk about our communities of color that deserve the same equity, that deserve to have our cultural celebrated. As a daughter and a child and now a representative of this great capital city of St. Paul and someone who, like my colleague here, Cha, stated, you know, I grew up making stops at that candy store as a West Sider, and I became a student of scholarships at St. Agnes to play basketball growing up in junior high to high school. And Tiger Jack opened up the opportunity for families, but not just Tiger Jack, but the Rondo community that has given the birth and the creation of our first black mayor, Mayor Melvin Carter, and the richness of culture that the Carter family and so many families, the Whites families that became families with Mexican families of the Rangels on the West Side, and they became our safe havens for the kids like myself, little girls of color that had dreams and aspirations and recognized that it takes a village to raise a child. I look forward and I'm so grateful for the partnerships that not only Rondo has done within the community with the Rondo Land Trust in the Rondo area, but how they're building partnerships with other
local housing organizations that are working on equitable housing from that side of the river to this side of the river. And I just want to acknowledge that great work, Makaya, that you've been leading. It's really just something really special to the generations of St. Paul that are surviving and that want St. Paul to be as open as it was and enriching in our history of BIPOC legacy for this state. Gracias.
Representative Hussein, close the comments.
Thank you very much, and everyone that has testified, and April Lucas, your dad was a hero for our community. I got to, you know his history while I was growing up in the Randolph community. They used to call him a gentleman. He used to help the community. And we're here to do the same thing with Land Trust of Randolph, help our community that needs. We always talk about equity, and we want to create a wealthy. This is a time that we need a justice and help for Randolph community, and I would love to give a shout out and say thank you, Makia, for the great work that you have been doing and for our community for the last couple of years, and just continue. And you're a wonderful, great executive director who's helping not housing, but helping people, place for them shelter, helping for the community impact, economic development. We need someone like Makia and Randolph Land Trust in our district, in our state. We need to help one another. And I would love to get help from my colleagues at this bill that I'm bringing forward will impact and help hundreds of community within my district. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative
Hussein. Gracias. Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for your time today. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3107 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and the bill is laid over. Members, we will be hearing our last new bills next week. Schedule will be finalized tomorrow, so check your emails, and thank you. We are adjourned.